Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent, thanks.
I'm doing great because, we've been doing this show a long time, and the listeners know that there's a fair bit of overlapping topics by time. Mm-hmm. Not that that's a bad thing.
No, but, I always explore it in a different way. But
it's really kind of fun when you just get to talk about something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a topic that's kind of near and dear to our hearts, you know, something that we both enjoy in various ways.
Yeah, you know? Which part, the selling part or the speed part?
Both, I guess. certainly speed on my behalf. Anything that can be done quickly is enjoyable as far as I'm concerned.
Everybody of a certain vintage is wondering if we're talking about another type of speed at this point.
Oh, no. More like speed on wheels.
But look, let's jump into it and introduce today's guest. I'm looking forward to getting this conversation underway.
Me too. So joining us today is Sean Momsen. Sean is the VP of Business Development and Marketing at Evology Manufacturing. Welcome to The Cooler Ring, Sean.
Thank you guys for having me. Yeah, excited to talk about all things speed of business.
Sean, I appreciate the business specificity there to get us away from our previous comment.
Yeah, gotta pull us away from that ditch.
So. Indeed.
Maybe it's three espressos that have kind of got me thinking about things very quickly.
First things first, Sean, let's understand Evology. What do y'all do there?
Yeah, so Evology is a rapid manufacturing company is the best way to describe us. We're a build-to-print company, so we build parts for other people, and we just happen to do it very, very quickly. We use a multitude of different manufacturing technologies from, you know, traditional manufacturing of machining and assembly and fabrication all the way to additive manufacturing. And myself and my business partners, even though the company is fairly young, just over 2 years old, we've got quite a bit of extensive manufacturing experience in a number of different industries, and had a lot of experience in additive manufacturing, so 3D printing, very early on. I think my business partners at a previous business that they were at, they got their first 3D printer in 1995 or 1996, and their first metal 3D printer in 2004, 2005. So very early on in the technology process.
You know, a lot of people think of 3D printing as a relatively new thing, but obviously, you know, it goes back quite a long ways, well before that, but certainly popularized in the last decade or so.
Yeah, I think it's maybe new to consumer and kind of the attainable to consumer with some of the desktop units coming out and, you know, the advance of computing and programming, where it used to be just more of a prototyping tool for industrial products, right? Mm.
And I have a question for you about kind of the forming of the company, but I'd love to learn a little bit more just about your background before you helped form Evology here.
Yeah, so as any good college student might do, you know, you change your major and change what you want to do in life based on your skills. So I started as a mechanical engineering student, and because I'm a big gearhead, I always wanted to design cars and love how they work. I love working on my own vehicles, but quickly realized as I got into class that I was not very good at CAD and so computer aided design, and I would be in class and we're trying to be modeling, 3D modeling this thing, and I'd look over at the guy next to me and he'd have the whole thing done with like crazy tech swirls on it to, you know, flare it up a little bit, and for me I was still like with a block with a chip out of it. So realized that some of my skills weren't necessarily going to help me along in finding a career in mechanical engineering, and transitioned to a major that was more, still had the dynamics, statics, that type of stuff, but it was also more business focused. And so kind of transitioned there. I got my start in internship doing hot section non-moving parts for turbine engines. So land-based gas turbines, auxiliary power unit turbine engines, kind of moved into overhaul and repair of those. So more the customer facing side of working with them and their fleets of engines to overhaul and repair them for the airlines. You know, people think of airplanes and engines are really just a battery for them, right? They will take the engine off, send it out to get repaired and put a new one on so they can keep that asset flying and keep it making money. Obviously that's not a 2-hour job to change an engine, but so then from there, kind of went into product development, really got my start in as a product manager. We were developing lighting and electronics for the interior of aircraft and exterior of aircraft. So we were changing all the incandescent to LED to make it more efficient and lighter weight and everything like that. And then moved from there into a returnable packaging business and was kind of the director of product management for a few of our teams there. And then all throughout all of those careers, I had used a company called Midwest Composite Technologies as a supplier of mine that could do things quickly, get prototypes so we could get through product development testing as fast as possible. And in the aviation product development industry, if you don't hit timelines, there's fines. So there's, you know, I remember one project we were on, it was $10,000 a day for every day we were late in delivering the product because the aircraft can't fly. So this company eventually went to work there, met my business partners, my Evology business partners there. And eventually we ended up leaving that company, letting our non-competes expire, and then starting up Evology Manufacturing roughly 2 years ago because we love making cool things and we like working with engineers and making things happen very quickly. So.
That, what an awesome trajectory. It's very cool. I mean, you know, wanting to be a mechanical engineer and then realizing you're not good at CAD was like when I went to design school and then found out I was really terrible at drawing. but, right. when you started Evology with your partners, was the goal originally to think about things in terms of the speed that you could bring them to market? Was that the founding principles of what you were looking to accomplish?
Yeah. I think we're very much a service-based industry. Even though we're manufacturing tangible physical products, we're not doing the design. Our customers are doing the design. They know their products and their customer base better than we do. Where we come in with design is really design for manufacturing or additive design for additive manufacturing, where we can help them, you know, hey, if you change this feature, we can orient the part in a different angle and actually build it faster or reduce your cost because we don't have to do as much post-processing. And so we kind of help them with more the manufacturing process design and whatnot. But yeah, we certainly had the service in mind. When we left the previous company, it was, you know, our service had gone downhill. And if you're paying for this additive service and rapid prototyping service, you should want to get it quickly. So we knew we could do it. We had done it for a long time. I experienced it as a customer for a long time. And so we kind of knew what we could do and got back into it.
Is it the, I mean, in some ways, maybe I've already answered the question, but it just seems weird to me. Not weird, but I mean, in some instances, the world of additive manufacturing and 3D printing, like you just said, it's rapid prototyping. Like rapid's kind of in the name. Speed is expected. So is it just that the industry overall has maybe gotten a little slower as there's been some consolidation and bigger players are in it and they just maybe don't move as fast or not as responsive? What's happened there?
Yeah, I think getting away from things that surveys show and really understanding your customers and what their needs are, right? You know, we're not an inexpensive product or service that we produce. And it's interesting when we get, you know, our customers who typically produce, their production numbers are higher in a month a lot of times than our single year of even just parts manufactured, but they're doing it differently, right? And so when they come in and they see some of our machines sitting idle, it's they get kind of nervous, like, oh, is this company going to be okay? And I have to tell them and remind them that when their engineer calls at, you know, 3:45 in the afternoon and gives me a file, I can have that file printing at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they can pick it up on the way to work the next day if it's a short enough build, right? So if I didn't have that machine empty and it wasn't waiting there, I couldn't provide the level of service that we want to provide for people. So when our backlog gets out 2 weeks is a long time for us, we start getting nervous and we're like, oh, we can't provide that level of service we want to provide.
I love the how you're thinking about the business and how you execute on this. I'm wondering, how does it come to life in your marketing? Like, how are you explaining this and getting that point across?
Yeah, I think having been on the other side, I know what it's like to go into these product development meetings and have to tell upper management, hey, we failed a test, we're not on track anymore, or tell your customer that you're developing the product for, hey, we might be late, or things aren't going as planned, or those types of conversations where you get into the unknowns because you're developing a product, it's brand new, you know, there's things are going to happen. And so the answer is usually, well, what's the plan to recover, right? How are we going to do this? And a lot of times that it goes back to how much overtime can we work, or is there anything we can do to pay more, to expedite, to figure this out? And it gets back to just the human element of it, right? I had to look those engineers in the face and say, hey guys, I'm sorry, but is there anybody willing to come in this weekend to work on this so we can try to get ahead of Monday so that we can, you know, if we can condense this critical path of timeline, we can get back on track. Is there anybody willing to do that? And so, you know, when we at Evology hear from an engineer or a buyer or a customer that, you know, there's that, that human element in there of, we're not just doing things quickly to get it, the product back on track. We're doing it so you don't have to come in on Saturday, and we're doing it so you can go to your kid's baseball game. And it's that human element that we try to come across in our marketing of, we understand you're a human, like you're a very intelligent business person developing some of the most innovative products in the world, but at the same time, you've got a family, you've got friends, you've got a partner that you want us to spend time with. And so what we really do is sell time, right?
And do you express that? I mean, I want to start writing some ad copy for this, right? It feels like you could have a lot of fun. Are you being that pointed and that explicit as you're marketing the customers, or more in the sales conversation?
A little bit of both. We're trying to figure out, we do a lot of content marketing. We develop content. We try to be as, like you said in the beginning, people sometimes think additive is new. And so we try to educate as much as we can for the people who still think it's new, or for the new things that are happening that, you know, they might be educated on it, but they might not know about the latest material or this new software package or this new additive technology that, or mixing and matching of technologies together to help get them the results they need. So we take very much the educational approach first, and then probably I would say about 10% of our content is focused on that emotional, the emotional approach. And I think as we start we're still, you know, 2 years old, so we're still in, hey, we exist mode. Like, you know, we're here, we're around. So once we get more of our brand established, I think we'll probably transition to more of that emotional connection, and less of the education. Right now, the education certainly helps for SEO and search and, you know, placing that content, but, we try to still get to it. It's just, we're maybe not as, pointed on that content side as I am in this conversation, or like you said, more, I certainly view marketing as from knowledge of existence to RFQ, that kind of span. And then sales is more RFQ until you get paid. That's kind of how I view the separation of the two duties.
On that point, I noted on your homepage, one of the headings that you have, about halfway down the page, says quotes in hours, delivery in days. And so, you know, you kind of see here that, that, you know, there's you know, speed baked into that, obviously, in messaging that you're using, but then it also has to come to life on the back end from a sales perspective. So I don't know how far you want to go into that, but I'd be interested to understand kind of how you, is there automation involved? Like, what are you doing in order to be able to quickly turn those things around? And
yeah, that's the core of our business, right? That service aspect of it. So, you know, it's that, it's not just a slogan. We try to live that as best we can. And when we know we're not going to live up to that, we try to inform our customer right away. Like, hey, I know you're used to getting quotes in a few hours from us. This is going to take a little longer, and just set that expectation, right? So some of our competitors have like an online quoting system or an instant quote where you upload a file and it'll give you a price. We certainly try to take the more relationship path with that. We don't have an online price tool or anything like that. We have an upload form where you submit your file and tell us a little bit about your project and what's important to you. And you'll probably get a phone call from us or an email back asking for some more information, because a lot of those online tools, you don't know what orientation the part is going to be in. It's probably just the cheapest, fastest way to get it to you. And they might gloss over what's important, where, you know, if as someone who's been in product development, there's, if you can look at it and say, okay, well, where is this going in the project? And what's important? Is there a bearing that gets pressed into this? So you need a really tight tolerance for where that's going to go? Or do you just need something that's going to work? Or are aesthetics really key on this? Because you're going to put this on a boardroom table in front of executive leadership, and it just doesn't need to function. It needs to look good too. There's all these little nuances to it that will change the way we do something. And so that's why when we do say quotes and hours, our average quote turnaround time is about 3 hours. Once you give us all the information we need to quote it, it's about a 3 hour turnaround on most of the stuff we do. Again, we'll set that expectation if it's going to be longer up front. And then our average plastic turnaround time is about 18 hours. So we're, from the time the PO comes in to the time it ships out the door is about 18 hours. Now, there's certainly builds that can last 3 days, 7 days, 15 days of building before the part's done, but that's kind of our average. And then for metal, we're around 2 to 3 day turnaround time. So we try to put some automation in there to help our workflows. So, you know, we try to communicate to our customers the file type we need to help make us efficient so we don't have to go convert it. Or we try to ask for the information that we need up front to help make us efficient, which helps get them what they need faster. We have a homegrown ERP system and MES system that I can pull up on my phone. I can look at on our visual. We have a bunch of big screen TVs around the place that have our schedule on it. So anybody can look at it at any time and say, you know, how far out is our lead time? And can I take this job? And if I take this job, what is going to be my delivery date to the customer? So we're all on that same page of, it may not be the most efficient way to do it, but if it gets it out the door faster to our customer, that's what matters, and making sure it's right when it leaves our building.
Sean, I wonder, you know, as you go down this path of really leaning into selling speed and making that the, and I appreciate that there's lots of other, you know, benefits to doing business with y'all. It's not like you don't know what you're doing and you're only selling speed, right? You're selling quality fast, et cetera. But nevertheless, leaning in and selling speed, is there any part of you that's concerned that as you grow, that you won't be able to be as fast?
No, I think it's certainly scalable. You know, that was one of the things at the previous company that they had some concern over, that it wouldn't be, but then when they tried to scale it, it didn't work and we went backwards. But they weren't scaling it the way we knew how to scale it. So I think certainly here it's that communication aspect of and some process as you guys would say, process.
nice.
Putting that in place to make sure there's some consistency, there's that standard work, but then when things don't go right, you still have to have that freedom to flex, you know. It gets back to that mix of people as well as equipment. The nice thing about this equipment is you do the work up front, you hit the button and it goes, right? You have to maybe load it with material or do something like that. And then the labor work also happens on the post-processing side. So after it comes out, cleaning the part up, getting it ready to ship. So I think as we lean into speed and how we can continue to grow yet stay efficient and stay having the best service in the industry, there's just some key positions that we need to continue to add to make sure that that deviation of work always leads back to customer experience and customer satisfaction. It starts on the front end. So right now it's myself doing a number of the quotes when they come in, when we get a lot of quotes in at one time. We're a small business, right? So we flex and I'll pull in our operations guy to help with quoting, and then vice versa. Hey, quoting's a little slow right now. Can you help change over a machine? Can you help break this part out? Can you, you know, as a small business, we can do that. And so that cross training is very, very key as we continue to grow and scale on the sales side, on the operations side, and continuing through those things. So you can flex when you need to, right?
That would be an interesting process to watch evolve over the next number of years. Anyway,
well, it is right in the name of
the company. Yeah.
Or just like, you know, the... Jeff, you can think about that as an agency owner, probably in much the same way. It's like if you want to hire a web designer who can also do some front end coding and isn't a bad illustrator, and on and on and on, and you're trying to get that kind of cross function, it is possible, but you're going after unicorns on an ongoing basis. And
small. Yeah.
I appreciate that this might be a bit different, but it's kind of, I think it will be interesting to see how the systems that you build in to maintain the speed advantage.
Yeah. We're very much a theory of constraints kind of view. Again, back to that machine. If I don't have an empty machine, there's my constraint right away. Right. If I have a bunch of quotes coming in, I'm the constraint and I need help. Pull in operations. If we've got a bunch of work, but like you said, on the creative side, right? It's being able to flex and not necessarily what those people want to do every day, right? But what they still can do and they're somewhat good at. If the vision is clear, of the business, and they can see that how what they're doing is task significant to the end goal, you know, then it's okay, we've gone a week or 2 months with this constraint, people aren't liking it, so we clearly need to hire for that core competency. But then once that core person comes in, we're going to cross train them as well. You know, that and that job description has to have that in there too. So
how have your, I guess I'll ask this as a bit of a two-pronged question, but how have your customers responded to this, and how have your competitors responded?
So customer-wise, a lot of our previous customers are very excited that we're back. They are ecstatic. Our biggest challenge with them right now is, you know, the previous business took 30, 40 years to build all that capacity, all that technology, all of that. And so they want us back, but with that level. And obviously we're still a small business. We're growing, we're adding, and we're growing well, and we're doing the right things, and we're on our way. We just can't snap our fingers and get there with how we need to. But so they're excited we're back. Our competitors, it's been an interesting few years just in the overall additive space. Not just companies like us, contract manufacturers and service providers, but even in the OEM machine manufacturers, the people who are making the machines that we buy and use to service it. So it's been interesting. There's been a ton of consolidation on the machine manufacturer side, as well as the service provider side, some of these online platforms. I think the interesting thing is, you know, you get back to the speed side of things. And once you can provide somebody with that level of service, they usually don't go anywhere else. And so that's been our biggest challenge, is we don't want to grow so fast to let our customers down. We never want them to experience that, because if we do, and we can't provide the service levels they need, they're going to have to go somewhere else, because that project has to be done, right? So for us, it's making sure we can always provide that level of service, which means machines sitting idle, waiting for a job to come in, or not advertising a technology as much until we get enough capacity where we don't just have one machine. We've got a few machines that we can keep going, and then the labor side of things and the talent side of things, making sure we have the right people cross-trained before we go out and start advertising a technology, right?
I think, Sean, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch you grow, though. This is a cool approach. I feel like as we started this conversation, I'm like, okay, are we going to be able to get Sean off of his game here? Will he like kind of divert and stop talking about speed and then get distracted? And man, I think I tried a number of times, and you know, you're very focused on this being the core differentiator, and you know, that's I think a lot of people listening would do well to listen to that part of it, whether it's speed or some other point of differentiation. It's the focus on it that I think is going to win the day here. So thank you for sharing your experience with us. This has been awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that customer experience is so key. You know, like, you guys could literally go out and buy the exact same machines we have, do the exact same thing. And if you can't provide that level of service, you know, where are people going to go? Obviously there's a pricing element and everything like that to it, but whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a marketing agency, whether it's, you know, whatever business you have, if you can do something faster than somebody else for relatively the same price, you're going to win, right? So speed is such a key differentiator. The challenge with that is making sure that speed doesn't sacrifice that customer experience, right? If you make yourself fast but difficult to do business with, it has to go hand in hand with being easy to do business with as well. So I think that's really where we see the great feedback from our customers. Rarely do they say you're the best price out there, but you know, they say your service and ability to pull rabbits out of the hat is really good. So,
man, you don't often actually see somebody that fulfill, you know, normally it's that you can have two of three, you know, quality, speed, or price, but you guys seem to be hitting all three. So I've really enjoyed the way that this conversation has gone. And as an entrepreneur myself, I love hearing about not just how you're talking about it from a marketing and sales perspective, which is obviously, you know, where most of our audience is, but also just from how you structured the business and thought about it from the, you know, imagining it at the beginning and how you're executing on that. It's been really fascinating. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I think, you know, somebody asked me the other day, if I give you $1 million to market, you know, what would you do? What would you use it on? I think we keep doubling down on content. I think that is, you know, the oceanfront property that everybody can buy right now. You know, you just keep making as much as you can and keep buying that oceanfront property. But then I would honestly put it into our operations side of things. And because the best marketing and best salesman's tool is, you know, execution, to doing what you say you're going to do. So
wonderful. Thanks.